The identification of bodies or body parts is a painstaking process. It is scientifically precise, orderly, and it's grim. NPR's Christopher Joyce has more now on how it will be done.
At Dover Air Force Base in Delaware, a tightly secured complex of buildings contains one of the world's largest and most sophisticated forensic laboratories. It was designed to handle anticipated casualties from foreign wars. Today, bodies from the Pentagon are arriving there. Other morgues are already operating in New York. At Dover, the work of giving names to the dead falls to the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology and their teams of dentists, anthropologists, X-ray technicians, and other experts. A single plane crash is normally considered a large identification project, at least on American soil. Charles Stahl, formerly chief medical examiner for the Armed Forces Institute, says the scope of the job in New York and Dover is far from normal.
We're now talking about something that exceeds the total number of deaths at Pearl Harbor. So it's a staggering number of fatalities. And I don't think anybody is totally prepared to do this.
Recovery teams at the disaster sites are collecting everything they can find. In many cases, this means body parts. That poses special problems for forensic teams.
You need to find out what belongs to what, and that may be rather time-consuming. I think the important thing is that some orderly system has to be established.
Stahl says that system is exacting. Technicians take X-rays and photographs of the remains. FBI personnel will take fingerprints. Personal effects may help identify the person, jewelry, for example, or clothing. A person's teeth and dental work are unique clues. And anthropologists can tell a person's gender, height, and age from parts of a skeleton. Even an old bone fracture can be a clue to identity. Family members may be asked to identify bodies from photographs. If that's not possible, investigators will need the missing person's dental and medical records, and even hairbrushes or toothbrushes. These are sources of DNA, which will be sent to Brian Smith, director of the DNA lab for the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology in Maryland.
We seek to obtain a 5 to 10 gram sample of tissue or bone that will be placed into a tube, and everything is given its own evidence number. And then from that tissue, a DNA profile is generated.
DNA in each human cell has patterns. While humans share many of the same patterns, there are also segments of DNA whose pattern is unique to each person. Scientists take samples of DNA from as many as 13 of these unique segments. They serve as a sort of fingerprint, except that on their own, says Smith, they don't tell you very much.
The most important part is that a profile generated from an unknown individual or an unknown fragment of tissue does us no good unless we can compare it or match it back to a known DNA profile, taken either when that individual was alive or perhaps a composite made up from related individuals.
Identifying bodies from the Pentagon may be easier because the military routinely collects blood samples from active duty personnel. They are kept on paper blotters in sub-zero freezers. For missing civilians, a blood sample, an old tooth or lock of hair, might suffice. If technicians can't get that, they take DNA from close relatives, the parents of the missing person or the children, and compare that to the body's DNA profile. DNA profiles have identified air crash victims in the past, including bodies that have been submerged for weeks underwater. But fire can damage or destroy the DNA in tissue and even bones and teeth. Former Institute medical examiner Charles Stahl is nonetheless optimistic.
I think that for the most part, it is possible to identify many of these individuals. There may be situations where there are still remains that can't be identified, but with time, that may be resolved, too.
With time, he says, may mean many months. Christopher Joyce, NPR News, Washington.